Dear Dhamma friends, hope you can see the picture. So here actually we have discussed last time about Satisampajanya Sutta, and someone has requested to discuss this sutta, Phena Pindupama Sutta. It's literally can be translated as lump of foam. So you can actually read this sutta later. So I have already uploaded this to the website. You can read it. So basically, in one occasion, Buddha was in Ayodhya. So that is, sometimes people are telling it is, nowadays it is the Afghanistan, Pakistan, that area. That is the Ayodhya. So Buddha was staying at that given moment in that area. And he see this Ganges, the river Ganges, and there he gives a very beautiful simile. Now, what he mentioned is that when someone is looking this Ganges river, and it is closer to the river bank, there are sort of foam, and as the kind of a slight wave again and again hitting the river bank, so this foam get generated. Again and again the river flows, or the waves are hitting the river bank, and as a result this kind of a foam get generated. Now assume that someone from the distance probably cannot see what is really there. So it appear from the distance like a kind of a solid stone, or kind of a white stone, kind of a solid something. So this is what we can see from the outside. It's very white in color, and it's a sort of a huge something. So from the distance, we can't decide what is really there. Now assume that this person who is quite inquiring, investigating, and he now come more closer to this, and as he come more closer and he observes it and he pay more close attention to it, there he may understand, okay, this is a lump of foam, it's a glob of foam. So this is because of his own investigation, his own examination, he understands this. So it's a kind of a lump of foam. So, and once he very well know that it's a foam, it is not a stone, it is not something solid, and what is inside is merely empty, simple air, and there is nothing substantial. Now he feels it is nothing, it's empty. There is nothing substantial, it is not worthy. No point of collecting it, no point of thinking it mistakenly as, say, white stone or something precious, but it is rather invaluable. There is no value at all. It is completely empty, hollow. So this is the understanding that this person gets after the examination, after proper investigation. So similarly, Buddha's mentioned, so someone who is the practitioner, who also examined this very body, like what we did today. So assume that one already has some amount of developed concentration, and with that developed concentration, now he pay attention, close attention to various element characteristics. Say we discussed today the touching sensations. So we kept kind of close examination to those touch sensations, and as we more closely examine, at the beginning it appear like a single thing, something. But more closer, again and again we examine, we will understand it is not something. It is not something solid. It is not something constant. It is not something permanent. It is not something substantial. But as we more closely examine, so this whole something going to disintegrate. So it is more and more sensations, or more and more element characteristics. So there are group of characteristics. It's not a single characteristic, but a group of characteristics. And the collectively, it appear like a single thing. But as we closely examine, so then we really understand, okay, it is not a single thing, though it appear like a single thing, something substantial. But as we closely examine, then we will understand, okay, it is not single thing. It is not something substantial. It's a collection of element characteristics. So each minute element characteristics has its very instantaneous lifetime. There is no long lifespan. It's very instantaneous. It's momentary. Arising in a moment, it disappears. Arising in a moment, it disappears. Altogether, the whole thing represents like something, but as we look at it more closely, there is nothing substantial. It is hollow. Nothing worth, nothing valuable. So this is what Buddha mentioned about the form. Here the form aggregate, rupa kanda. So as we generalize this to the whole body of ours, so at the beginning we feel that this is something solid. There are solid particles and they are very thick, maybe very rough, maybe very heavy. But more and more we recognize these heavy particles, roughness, stiffness, hardness, and even the soft particles, kind of mild, soft characteristics, and even the kind of fluidity, cohesion, and maybe heat, cool, those characteristics, maybe vibrations, movements. So all these are what we represent as a body. So this body, Buddha mentioned, is consisting of four elements, four great elements. So how we comprehend is by observation. This is not simply by reading a book or going through a scientific article. Rather, we are trying to examine it more closely. Actually, even we can sort of use those 32 parts at the beginning if one likes. Without applying the kind of loathsomeness into it, we can even look at the body as bodily parts. Head hair, body hair, teeth, flesh, etc. So likewise, you can even dissect the whole body into various bodily parts. There are also, to some extent, this compactness view going to be breaked. So typically, we are trapped in this compactness view. It's compact. And but as we closely look at it, we understand, okay, it is not really compact. It is not something solid. It is not something substantial. Rather, it's a kind of a collection. It's a group. So it's a kind of a representation. It's a kind of a manifestation. It pretends like something, but as we look closely, there is nothing. It is hollow, insubstantial, nothing valuable, nothing compact. Now, if we look at this body like this, so the whole body can even disintegrate in the sense that, say, sometimes as you are closing your eyes and you are paying close attention to all these very subtle element characteristics, so you may lose the boundary of your body. Say, at the beginning, you may have kind of a perception that head is like this, the neck is like this, the shoulders are like this, this is the shape of the body. So you have kind of a boundary, kind of a demarcation. But as you more and more do this examination, observation, insight practice, so this demarcation, so all these boundaries, lines, going to disappear. It become blur. So now you can't distinguish whether it is in where this demarcation, this boundary of the body. So it appear like blurred. And more you do it, even sometimes this whole body appear disintegrated, fallen into pieces, broken into pieces. Now you can't perceive kind of a solid thing. You can't perceive something a solid body. Rather, the whole thing appear like disintegrated, broken into pieces. And this is how it represents. So more and more we closely examine, so ultimately we are able to come closer to this Buddha simile. So in this Penapindupama Sutta, so Penapindupama Rupam. So Buddha sort of give a simile to this whole Rupa, Rupakhanda, bodily aggregate, material aggregate. It is very much like a form, a lump of form, a glob of form. Because though it appears something solid, like a thing, as we closely examine, like a lump of form, there is nothing inside. It's hollow. It's empty. There is no compactness. There is no core. There is no substance. So likewise, more and more if one examines this whole body, so one may get a better perspective, better understanding about the body. Now, this is not only to our own body. I'll use the typical terminology, own body. But later we will understand even to the others' bodies are the same. Now, you can sort of inferentially understand, okay, even though we call as him, her, mother, father, sister, etc. So all these, all physical phenomena, though they appear like something substantial, ultimately once we look at them closely, examine them closely, nothing substantial. There is no core, there is no internal substance. Everything disintegrates. Now you can't find kind of a demarcation. Now you can't find a boundary. So internal earth element and the external earth element are the same earth element. Internal water element and the external water element are the same water element. Internal air element and the external air element are both same air element. So internal fire element, heat, and the external fire element, heat, are the same heat element. So none of these elements know whether they are inside or whether they are outside. So those duality is something that we impose, we introduce. So just for our easy communication, we are introducing a lot of conventions. We are putting, importing, we are inserting so much of signs, marks, languages, words, languages, sentences, so many things. Ultimately, what happens, we become a victim of all these conventions. And we feel that convention is the truth. So we have a kind of a, now kind of a dilemma, where the convention say it is something. It is something. It is really worth. It is really valuable. But on the other hand, the insights show it is not valuable. It is empty. It is hollow. And it is insubstantial. Now we need to understand, okay, this the typical compactness view now going to break. The typical values that we have applied, given to this very body, now going to sort of reduce. So the typical values that we have given to outside bodies still going to disappear, going to reduce. And the difference between the internal and external going to disappear. And the same thing is true to the past, already sort of destroyed elements. So the already dead bodies. So this body, even though at the present moment it appears like this, so it's only after a couple of seconds, or even before that, this whole bodily elements disappear. They destroy and new elements going to generate. So the past elements, already dead elements, are the same. So nothing substantial there. So the present elements are the same, nothing substantial there. So because of this nutriments, so if there are new elements going to generate in the future, they too are not substantial. They too are hollow, empty, not worthy. So likewise, now you can further enhance your understanding by using inference. And there your understanding about this body is growing. Now you can even apply it to very far objects, maybe Jupiter, maybe Saturn, Mars. Nowadays, there's a big stories about Mars. So even to Mars, you can apply. So nothing substantial. I mean, everywhere, even though you spend millions, billions and go investigate. So we are investigating using our own sensors, and we may be using various instruments, apparatus to get more detail. But is it really worth investigating outside, or is it really worth investigating inside? So these are something that we can look at. So far near. So in near elements, our own body. So is it something substantial? Is it something solid? Is it going to disintegrate? So we all know that after death, so if we simply leave the corpse, the dead body outside, so it starts to disintegrate. So it becomes bloated, and the animals start to come and eat it, and now dissect and break into pieces. So likewise, the whole thing disintegrate, and even the skeleton going to disintegrate, breaks into pieces, and ultimately be kind of like a dust powder. So likewise, if we use our intellect, even we can understand, okay, this is the nature. Actually, we need to use some experiential knowledge using the meditation, using the mindfulness, concentration, to have some direct experience. So that is actually kind of an eye-opening insight. So once we have that eye-opening insight, so we can apply it again and again, even using the inference. And there you will understand, okay, this is common to this body. And how about another body? How about another animal's body? How about other, say, furniture? How about these all other things appear like solid? So likewise, so more and more the practitioner has a kind of a investigation. He is inquiring things. He's not ready to simply blindly believe. Rather, he has a kind of an inquiring attitude. So his mind is questioning. So is it, if the nature is like this, if this very body has now disintegrated, I can't find a boundary. So everything appears like blurred. So once you close your eyes and you pay more close attention with very good concentration, and you are experiencing a lot of element characteristics. So element characteristics are there, but no body, no boundary, no solid thing. There's no one unit. So everything now disintegrated. So likewise, our perception now going to change. So previously we had a perception like it is something that I am living. So this is my body. This body is beautiful, this body is strong, this body is pretty, this body is old, this body is young. So many perceptions were there. Now, so all those are gone. Instead, what we have is these merely elements. So operation of elements. So what we are eating. So the elements are, say, external elements come and mix with the internal elements. We can say like that. But really, it's even more subtle. I mean, these external elements are helpful to generate more sort of new elements, more healthy new elements, we can say. So likewise, more and more, now we are inquiring, investigating. And our wisdom is now improving. And the base is very much that experiential direct knowledge. And based on that, we are more and more applying even the inferential knowledge, and our understanding is broadened. So Buddha helps, and Buddha says that internal elements and external elements are merely elements. They don't know where they are. Say as you are entering your house, so the body doesn't know, I mean, whether the body is inside or outside. And the house doesn't know whether this body is inside or outside. They are merely elements. It's a kind of an exchange of elements. So certain group of elements are outside, Now that group of elements come and mix with the inside elements. You can say like that. So likewise, now your whole perception, the way of looking at things, the perspective now going to change. So as a result, what happens? So if we have given really huge value to this very body, huge value to this all physical phenomena, so that value become reduced. So we become disenchanted. We were really sort of attached to this body. We were valuing this body. We have already made a big conceit because of this body. But now, because of this insight practice and wise investigation, now that kind of delusion going to disappear. And you will understand, okay, this is merely elements. And it is empty, it is hollow, nothing substantial. And inside and outside are very similar. We are the ones who have put this kind of a convention. It is merely a convention, it is not something real. Now, likewise, your understanding is growing. So this, as this understanding is growing, Buddha mentioned, so when there is proper understanding, there can't be an attachment. There can't be a sort of attraction. Rather, what happens is we get a kind of a disenchantment. We start to detach. The mind start to detach. We are not sort of doing it forcefully. Rather, more and more the understanding improves, understanding grows. Naturally, mind starts to let it go. Naturally, mind starts to put it aside. Naturally, mind starts to give less value. It does not mean that you are killing yourself or committing suicide or any of those things. We simply bear the thing. We become more patient. We understand, okay, now can't do anything. I have to simply bear this whole body. So I have to make use of it. This is like a vehicle. It's something that I am now going to use to further improve mindfulness, further enhance my understanding. So now you are looking at the whole thing from a different perspective. Now body is kind of an instrument for you to cross over to the other shore. So previously you are blinded by the body. Assume that you are a beautiful person, I mean smart person. So that has generated a lot of conceit in our mind. We can't respect another person. We simply look down others. We always exaggerate ourselves. We want to show off. So a lot of conceit was generated because of the body. But now there's a huge blow to that conceit. So to which part, to which element are we going to give value? So if it is simply a merely element characteristics, constantly changing, constantly arising and passing away, so where are we going to recognize? Where are we going to identify as me? Where are we going to identify as I, mine? So these are something that this inquiring mind, investigation, is start to sort of arise. So these insights are sort of eye-opening insights. So there Buddha mentioned that the kind of a significant perception change going to happen. So this significant perception change helps us to disenchant this whole upadana, clinging. And now mind starts to let go of the thing. Not grasping it, not holding it, not attaching to it. So mind now finds its own kind of a refuge. Mind starts to be free from the body. Mind doesn't want to attract it and hold to the body. Rather, mind now starts to stay independent from the body. So this is something that actually happens through Kaya Anupassana. So the form aggregate, Rupa Khanda, is very closely examined in the Kaya Anupassana. So Kaya Anupassana is where the form aggregate is directly dealt with. So more you are developing or practicing Kaya Anupassana, more you understand the nature of the body. So more you understand the nature, the reality of the body, the disenchantment develops, the letting go happens, the putting aside happens. So the previous values are going to disappear. Now you have kind of a less attachment, less abstraction, less holding, less clinging to the body, to the materiality. So likewise, so mind can even completely let go of the body and can even liberate, can even be free, not holding to anything. So likewise, this aggregate, so the form aggregate is something that we can deal with, we can make use of to improve our insights, to develop the insight practice, to improve, say, mindfulness. So therefore, Buddha, one by one, going by giving various beautiful similes to each aggregate, and we'll take another aggregate on next time. And with that, I like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
I'm sorry, Bhante. Currently, there are four questions.
Yeah.
Question number one. This is a general question. It's actually a follow-up from a question last week. What I'll do is I'll read it out, but if you need me to repeat the question from last week, I can. This is the question. Venerable Bhante, should I continue the practice by creating more opportunities when I'm calm and objectively viewing, or should I attempt to view the process even when the mind is naturally agitated from day-to-day activities? Thank you. That's the end of the question.
So basically, both you can use actually. I mean, day-to-day activities are part of the practice. So more you are incorporating those daily activities to your practice, so more benefit to you. So it is our skill, how well that we can incorporate various daily activities to our practice, how make use of them, how to get the benefit from them. So that is the skill that we can make use of. So therefore, I mean, if you can use them, it is good. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 5, walking mindfulness. Dear Bhante, I would like to ask questions about walking practice, how to handle the situation when the mind drifts away from the walking process. The technique I use to bring the mind back is to check that I'm aware of the sensations of the sole of the foot. When I start the practice, always I get familiarized and be aware of these sensations first, where I get a lot of information in a few minutes. Therefore, it is something that I know quite well. If I check with a lot of vigilance and effort, I observe that the mind snaps back immediately to the walking process. It is a bit dramatic and not a smooth transition. If I do it gently with minimum effort, I observe that the mind drifts back slowly and smoothly, comes back and settles, synchronizing with the walking process. I think there is a tipping point where this effort is just enough for me for it to come back. Otherwise, it can stay drifted in some thought or a sound. My gut feeling says that this should be the correct way, but thought of checking with Bhante. Is it beneficial to observe how the distracted mind comes back and the return to walking? Thank you for your guidance and insights, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to see the return path, how it is coming back and again established on the body, and what actually caused it to come back. Say, for example, mind has drifted, assume, to a sound, to a song, for example. So you are, now the mind is enjoying a song. Now you completely lost the present moment. While enjoying that, while you are unmindful, assume that there's a kind of a sensation, kind of a trigger happened at the leg. So immediately that triggering happen at the sole, at the foot, is sort of triggering the mind back to the present moment. So it's a kind of a signal given by the body to come back, to return. So that is the proximate cause to come out of that dream, come out of that proliferation. And now assume that now you are not ignoring that trigger, rather you immediately come back and start to use that trigger, use that sensation, you use that whatever the element characteristics as a way or mechanism to improve the mindfulness, establish the mindfulness, re-establish the mindfulness. So that is the proximate cause for you to regain mindfulness. So this is a kind of, I mean, there are different methods, or I mean, even without such trigger, probably while you are in a dream, still the mindfulness can happen. There, it is not essential to have a bodily trigger. Say, for example, you are in a anapanasati while in a sitting session, and without your knowledge, say, mind has drifted. Now you are in a dream world. But without any kind of a bodily sensation, kind of a significant bodily sensation, there are kind of a mindfulness regain. So it is... So in a way, it's a kind of a good examination, good research in a way. So how this mind has regained the attention, how it regained the mindfulness. So what are the exact causes? It's a kind of an investigation. If you like, you can do it, and it actually adds a new depth to your practice. So rather than simply doing in the typical, traditional or the familiar manner, so you are adding a new depth to your practice. So how this mind is returning? So what are the exact causes? What made it to come out of that dream? So you are sort of inquiring the nature of the mind, the behavior of the mind. So the causes affecting the mind. So this is something useful. So it's always kind of an arya pariyesana, that we are investigating about the nature of the mind, this whole body and form. Sorry, the whole this psychophysical nature. So we are now trying to investigate. It's a kind of a interesting and again really challenging and kind of eye-opening research. So therefore, I like to encourage you to do this investigation. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 5, mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, I have been practicing mindfulness due to your kind guidance and the programs like these. Thus, first, I would like to pay my gratitude for this service. Lately, we have been discussing more about the very subtle mind proliferations that can happen once you reach a certain stage when calming down the mind and settle down in Kayanupassana. I have heard several reports around these sanya or mental images during the past question and answer sessions. Personally, this happens to me after about 25 to 30 minutes into the practice. And I've heard that for some people, it seems like immediately happening when they sit to meditate. Bhante has warned about this many times, not to get deceived by this sanya. However, Bhante, they seem to be not Buddha images or some iconic things, which are easy to handle, but stemming from our own close experiences or real-life situations. I have heard some interpret the sanya as future things to happen and some as past life experiences. In my situation, I could not draw any meaning, but they are definitely realistic images as we sometimes see in dreams. I appreciate Bhante's advice on how we should not get carried away by these mental constructs. At this point, I think we should not think as thoughts to rationalize logically that these are mere sanya. We need something subtle and practical than thoughts or logic to get out from the state once we are in this mental layer. One method I'm trying is to be aware of the last state of the already faded meditation object, which can be the blank space after the breath vanished. If I were with the breath, or flux-like elemental characteristics if I were with the body, or the sound of silence if I were hearing it before I started getting these mental images. It is like one leg in the mental background so that I won't get swamped or absorbed to these mental images. Appreciate Bhante's advice with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, if you like, you can do some sort of an experiment, no harm, but it depends actually. So this is some people are interested. I mean, when mental images are happening, they are trying to predict, okay, this is something happening at a far distant place. This is the kind of a representation of that, indication of that. There's a kind of an accident going to happen. This is a kind of a signal for that. This is a kind of a prediction. This is something belonging to the past life. This is a past life experience, has a kind of a remnant, and that is representing right now. So how are you going to verify? So that is the question. Assume that this is something really belong to a past life. So are you going to search for your, say, past life parents? Are you going to write a book on the past life incidents of so and so? And how worthy is that experiment? So are you going to spend all your life searching for your past life? So this is something that we need to think. So how are we going to verify? So these perceptions, so that's why, I mean, it's very difficult to give the exact reason, cause for them to appear. It's mostly, maybe say before your sitting session, say you had a chat with someone and you were discussing on a particular topic, and once you stop that and come back and sit, and probably there are some remnants of that discussion and that subject may appear as various kind of images in the mind, so that we can of course understand, okay, this is related to the previous discussion I had with so and so. Say someone is suffering. Now you heard about him and you were discussing, thinking about him. And after that, you start your sitting practice. Now during your sitting session, probably you get various thoughts, memories, past incidents with him or her. So to your mind. So there you can understand, okay, because just before the practice, I was thinking about him and he is in a danger. So that is why now these all different types of images are appearing in the mind. Now, likewise, we can get some proximate relationship between how these images are happening, mental images are happening. But we can't actually give exact reason, exact kind of a relationship to each and every image. So there are sometimes images where we have no memory at all whether we have seen someone. So that is where we are now trying to sort of connect it with our past life, maybe to a kind of a future incident, future meeting. So how are we going to verify, and how worth it is it? So this is where, I mean, people actually interested about these things. So they have developed various science about these. Say, talking about various past lives, and they are quite interesting, and certain stories are real, and they did experiments, and certain people have some special skills, like Edgar Cayce, who can he can self-hypnotize himself, and when someone is in front of him and so he or she is talking his own story, now he do kind of self-hypnotization and he searches the past incident, past life incidents. So these are very interesting in a way. And so ultimately, are they really, I mean, if it may worth to convince ourselves, okay, there were past life. If you are not believing in past life, probably if you get solid, say, facts about it, probably now you change the mind. Yes, there was a past life. Now I have to believe it. Now I have solid facts. So fine, no problem. But on the other hand, how much time are we going to spend on this kind of an experiment is another point that we have to think. And how worth is it? And our mind is always interested about this kind of investigation and finding out a relationship. And there are many sciences and many predictions. traditions. And some people do even business. So they do some practice, and after some time they get these kind of different images, appearances, and even various sounds. And they connect it to some external source. And they say, okay, my past relative so and so is now have connected with me. He has given a kind of a prediction on to you. Okay, this is going to happen. So the in front of person, so he may believe it, and it might even happen. Then he go and tell to another person, okay, that so and so after his meditation, he sort of gets connectivity with his past relative. Now he gives predictions. Now you can become a fortune teller. Now you can become a predictor. So is it the practice? Is it the correct path? So is it worth? So this is something that we need to ponder. That's why Buddha mentioned. So if we give wrong values to our practice or the outcomes of the practice, we completely deviate from the path. So the images may be really beautiful. They may be quite attractive than the breath. So breath is nothing. Say rising and falling is completely useless when compared to the image appearing in the mind. So this image is so wonderful, so attractive, so important, so valuable. It's worth searching it, worth experimenting on it, worth reading a book about it. So now you go for astrology, you go for predictions, so and so forth. So this is where our path get misdirect or misled to a different something else. Now you are spending a lot of time on something else, and you are giving value to all these images, and you start to predict, you start to do all these sort of magics. And now you are not in the path. So the path is different actually. So Buddha's path, Buddha's direction is, Buddha says, whatever the image, whatever the perception, whatever the sign is like a mirage. Though it appear like substantial, though it appear like beautiful, though it appear like valuable, nothing is worth there. This, even it has a connection, even it has something kind of a connectivity to the past life, future life, whatever it is. But it's merely at this moment, it's a mental image. And if you have kind of a disenchantment towards that, then you can ignore it or you can drop it. You can let it go. So like we discussed today about the form aggregate. So when we are discussing about the, say, perception aggregate, so there are also the understanding is similar. So more and more the investigation happens on the form aggregate. So the understanding is ultimately is useless. It's not worthy of attaching, not worthy of even paying attention. It's not worthy of holding, grasping, and you simply let it go. So when you are investigating perception aggregate, same result. Rather than giving any value or relationship and any of these things, rather more you investigate, if you get kind of a disenchantment, if you feel that I need to relinquish it, I need to drop it, so then the mind become more clean, mind become clear, your mind become more spacious. It is not corrupted with various signs, not corrupted with various perceptions. You are not biased with various perceptions. You are not holding any sort of preconceived ideas, perceptions. So there you are getting a kind of a clear mind. There you get a kind of a cleansed mind, say, kind of a pure mind, we can say. So this purity, this clarity, this unattached nature, spaciousness, without any colored nature, unconditioned. So this is the direction that Buddha is leading us. So it doesn't have the values that we have given. So we have given values to all these beautiful images, attractions, and all these things. But Buddha doesn't give value to those. Buddha gives value to this calmness, this emptiness, this understanding, this clarity, this unattached nature, independent nature, the free nature of the mind. So therefore, we need to sort of decide, so which path I had to take. So there's a beautiful insight later they are developed called Magga Magga Jnana Dasana Visuddhi, where you have to differentiate what is the correct path, what is the wrong path. So as you are continuing your practice, there may be symptoms, there may be various signs, milestones. And on those locations, we have to take the correct path. So the correct path is not something that sometimes mind appreciate. So mind may give value to those beautiful things. Instead of that, we have to believe or trust the Buddha's teaching. And there we have to deviate from that wrong path and come back to the correct path. So correct path is always verifiable. Correct path is always present moment. It is not sort of deluding your mind. It is not coloring your mind. It is not corrupting your mind. It is more and more opening your mind. More and more cleansing your mind. So all the attachments are going to reduce. And the mind become less heavy. Your mind become lighter. So these are the kind of symptoms or the signals that we can use to differentiate between the correct path and the wrong path. And as a result, we have to find the correct path. Otherwise, we are wasting our time. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 7. This one is mindful sitting. Dear Swami Nwansa, regarding today's guided meditation, I tried to focus on the tightness of my leg muscles and weight on the buttocks after focusing on the body. This tightness or the hardness observation was possible during the initial stage until the place of the feeling was fading away. I started getting the sensations of tightness in other areas of the body, especially around the head, and could not keep the collectedness of the mind. I feel like the mind is scattered around many sensations. This may be because of the first time into this practice. Usually I start with the breath, and when the breath fades away, I could keep on focusing on the element characteristics as they appear. Should I keep this technique or try out focusing on the elements straight away as today? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, it depends on your concentration. If you have fair amount of concentration already built up, since you are back from walking session, so probably your mindfulness is well established, fair amount of concentration is developed, and you have the ability to focus your attention to wherever it is necessary. So if these skills are developed enough, you can directly start what we did today. If not, you have to, say, practice a little bit of anapanasati, rising and falling, and in order to refine mindfulness, sharpen mindfulness, and further have more concentration, and then you switch to this observation. So it is for you to decide.
Question number 5 of 7 is a general question. Dear Bhante, is the use of pesticides or chemicals to get rid of pests considered breaking the first precept? For example, head lice removal. We do not want to take life, but need to for health reasons. Appreciate your views. With metta, that's the end of the question.
You can have a bath instead, I feel. Instead of using all these chemicals, you know, sometimes harmful to the head, if you have a head. Probably it's up to you. I mean, by the way, we have to go for a middle path here. Buddha hasn't taken a kind of an extreme situation here. So that is what Nigantanatha Putta has taken, where he has gone even to the level that we always have to keep a strainer with us. So whenever we are drinking water, we always have to say check whether even the very, say, insects are there. Actually, Buddha also has given that to the monks. Say, if you very well know that there are insects in the water, so Buddha asks not to drink that water, not to throw that water away, because those insects may die. So you have some attribute, the kind of a compassion attribute there. But on the other hand, now if you are going to the extreme, now inside your body, there are millions, billions of, say, bacteria and all these, say, microorganisms. So if we are going to care of them, then we can't live. So that is where that we need to have the boundary. So something, so it actually has happened. So in one occasion, Venerable Moggallana, through his kind of psychic powers, he has seen even very, say, microbacteria kind of organs in the water or somewhere. And he asked Pante, I mean, how I can drink or use this, because there are so much of life there. And Buddha say, no, not that. If you do like this, then the future disciples can't adhere to that principle, can't adhere to that rule. So therefore, Buddha has given kind of a practical boundary. So we can't go to the very microscopic level. Rather, we have to sort of live with a kind of a practical boundary. So that is where Buddha stands. He hasn't gone to the very extreme that we have to honor, respect even the micro level, bacteria level. And on the other hand, he is not disrespecting the life when you really can see. Say, if you are, drinking, there is a water bucket, and there, say, you can really see the, mosquito larvae is available. So some insects are available. Then you see them. So your naked eyes can see. So at that time, we need to respect the life. You can't simply, say, kill those. And therefore, we need to take kind of a decision based on those points.
Question number 6 of 7, mindful sitting. Therawan Saranai Swami Wansa. While meditating under guidance today, by investigation of sensations, I could first feel the stiffness of the fore. Then I remembered that this is Patavi Dhatu that I am feeling. Then I could understand why I feel this is because I am breathing and the body is kept sensitive with the breath, i.e. the touch feeling is understood by the mind as we are alive, as we are living. I could feel sensations at different places. Is this a lack of attention? Then I felt the level of sensation is changing at each breath. I could also feel a burning sensation coming and going with the touch feelings. I thought this is Tejo Dhatu. And I thought this change is caused by Tejo Dhatu. And we feel the pains because of this Tejo Dhatu. Really appreciate if you could guide me with anything that I did wrong today. Much merits with metta, Therawan Saranai. That's the end.
Yeah, one important point is that we don't need to map immediately this experience with our book knowledge. And we don't need to exactly know, okay, whether this is Tejo Dhatu, whether this is Apo Dhatu, etc. It doesn't matter. Actually, if we are trying to map with this book knowledge, then we go wrong. We don't need to. So we don't need to bring that, labels into the picture. Rather, we have some idea about the elements, doesn't matter, but we give more emphasis onto the, experiential knowledge. So various, characteristics are available, but you can't exactly remember, okay, this is whether it is Tejo or Vayu or whatever it is, but you know very well it's a kind of element characteristic. It's a kind of a change. It's a kind of a vibration. It's a kind of a heat. It's a stiffness. It's a hardness. So you can simply remember those characteristics, qualities, and that is enough. You don't, it is not required to map that and exactly giving kind of a mapping between that book knowledge, the names, into the picture of the present moment. So, as on the other hand, simply you have to keep aside all those book knowledge, and they are merely conventions, labels. And now the prominence is given to the direct knowledge, and there you are dropping the labels, and not necessary to have labels. And you are directly experience the bodily characteristics, the element characteristics. Say, for example, you are, say, someone has given an apple. You have never tasted it. Now, but you have heard it. And someone has mentioned, okay, it is of this color, this of this taste, this is the size, this is the weight. And probably you can, once apple is on your hand, probably you can remember all this information. But now you can see for yourself. It's in your hand, on your hand. And now you can taste it by yourself because you can bite, take a bite. So now the direct experience is given more prominence than that book knowledge. So this is where I feel that you have gone wrong. So don't worry about those labels given. So they are just for the mere communication. Rather, if you can simply recognize different characteristics, that is more than enough.
Bhante, we have one more question and an announcement. Is it okay if we go a little bit over time?
Okay.
Question number 7, general question. Dear Bhante, do we have to develop concentration or samadhi to sharpen our mind before we try to see the body as foam or bubbles? That's the end of the question.
So it actually develops. Now, say for example, if you develop anapanasati, so say, if you are able to recognize whether it is long, short, whether it is the beginning, middle, end, from which nostril the in-breath happens, which nostril the out-breath goes out. And all this information is available because of the samadhi. So this is the clarity of the mind. This is the sharpness of the mindfulness. So you are able to maintain your attention for quite a long time in order to recognize these subtle aspects. So if you are capable, if you can do it, so that means the necessary amount of samadhi is available. So with such samadhi, you can start observing various phenomena, various element characteristics. So that very observation also contributes to samadhi. It is not that we have to start the observation by making the samadhi perfect. Rather, we can start at some level. So that's why I have given kind of an indication. So if you do anapanasati, then you can start to investigate various subtle characteristics of the breath. And if you are able to recognize those subtle characteristics, that indicates fair amount of samadhi is available. Mindfulness has developed. And then with that samadhi, you can actually start.
That's the end of the questions, Bhante. I'll just pass on for a quick announcement regarding the retreat.
Yes. So I just want to give some more details regarding the session program that we are organizing for in the Easter break. I'll just share the screen. Yeah. So there are actually two parts that we're going to do, as in two groups. So there'll be people who will be actually doing a residential retreat during these 4 days. So they will actually go to a location where they will do the practice. But also we are having this full program on Zoom. So you can join in, and Nirupa is coordinating the Zoom session. And she will give you more details regarding the times, and because we have a daylight saving time change in Australia. So for the 2 days, there's a break, and the slight difference in the timetable for the last 2 days to the first 2 days. So Nirupa, if you can give some more details about it.
Thanks, Chavira, and Avasare Bhante. As you can see, program which will start at 8 a.m. and then it will go ahead as mindful walking and sitting, and then mindful walking, then again mindful sitting sessions, 1 hour sessions. Then after that, there's a break at 11:30 a.m. for the lunch, No, sorry, I can't see. Yes, lunch, and then again, Swami Nahanse will join with us for the Sinhalese Dhamma talk at 1 p.m. Then again, after break, then mindful walking and then sitting session, then break. Then after that, mindful sitting session, then 6:30 break. And after that, again, Swami Nahanse will join with us for the short Dhamma talk in English. It would be probably short Dhamma talk about previous Sinha session. Then after that, Q&A Sinha and English session from 8:30 to 9:30. And then program will be at 9:30. This will continue 4 days. That's it. Again, over to Chandra.
I think that's the last thing we had.
Yeah, okay.
So what I'll do is I'll conclude this. Sorry. That's the end of the session. Just before we finish up, I'd like to thank Bhante and pass on our merits for giving up valuable time for this program, as well as the people working behind the scenes, especially to help out with the upcoming retreat as well, and making this program run smoothly. And also all those people seen and unseen participating. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Everyone's fine.